Hello and welcome to another episode of Read It With Whiskey. I am your host, Laura Gentinen, and today we have a very exciting guest. We have E.A. Robbins, the author of Scion of the Oracle. So let me tell you a little bit about E.A. E.A. Robbins is just having fun. She's an American expat who has no intention of ever permanently returning to her homeland. She has crippling attractions to well-dressed villains and jokes that require some base form of general geekery or nerdification. She travels the world, tries all the snacks, and makes all the mistakes, sometimes twice, but she's learning. I love that little blurb that she has on Amazon. It's so much fun. But we are actually going to be talking to her about her book, Scion of the Oracle, which is an Of Metal and Magic core story. So here's what it's all about. The seeds of prophecy bloom in the most unlikely of gardens. Dolly is sure there is adventure and excitement beyond Telsimar's timeless sandstone walls. Certainly something more than the daily routine of a flower delivery girl. There must be. If only she could prove herself to the secretive Society of the Divine and earn a place among its revered ranks of explorers. Under the cautious watch of her guardian and mentor, Kip, Dolly wonders if she will ever find an opportunity. When Catherine, a senior member of the mysterious society, ends up missing along with the magic dagger in her possession, Dolly realizes this is her chance to show her worth. Unbeknownst to both of them, this task will draw Dolly and Kip deep into the hidden history of Soria and to an understanding that some pieces of the past are better left forgotten. Scion of the Oracle tells the story of two rather ordinary florists dragged into a world of secret societies, peculiar assassins, and a long-lost prophecy that could change the world forever. Now, I gotta say, this is a binge-worthy book. I read it so quickly. I remember picking it up, I think it was maybe a Thursday or Friday, and then getting through it by the end of the weekend. And it's a lengthy book, so that was a pretty tough feat. But I'm really excited to dive into this interview with EA and tell you all the details of Scion of the Oracle. And just so you're aware, we did have some weird audio-video glitches, and you will hear a little bit of that within the interview. I apologize if there's any parts that are just uncomfortable to listen to because of those glitches, but please hold on till the end because we have some great content in this interview. Welcome to Read It With Whiskey, the interview podcast featuring science fiction and fantasy authors. My name is Laura Gentinen, your host and the author of the Shockwave series. I am also a book club moderator, speaker, and avid reader, truly invested in every author's story. Within this podcast, I bring to you, the reader, all the behind-the-scenes secrets to how these guest indie authors bring their books into the world. If you are a sci-fi fantasy reader, then you need to hear from these authors. Let's learn about the person behind the page. Sit back, sip some whiskey, and lean in to these self-published authors. Really quickly, I want to give you an episode update. All Laura J. Live update content will now be exclusively given to our Patreon members. This segment will no longer be featured in these public episodes on your favorite podcasting platform. However, you can gain access to this content by visiting www.patreon.com/readitwithwhiskey. Now, let's get on to the episode. Hello, E.A. Robbins, author of Scion of the Oracle. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm good. It's nighttime here, but I've had a great day. Thank you. And how about yourself?
Yes,
it is morning.
Yes, it is early morning for me, late night for you. But I'm just so excited to be able to talk to you here on Read It With Whiskey. So I would love for you to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got into writing.
Long story short, a lifetime of writing. I've always been a writer, I guess. You know how it starts, journals, bad poetry, English major, still bad poetry, more bad poetry.
There's a theme here.
Really bad poetry. Got some of it published. Actually, 2 years ago, I randomly hooked up with J.M. Williams, who was then working for Fiction Vortex Press. And he had put a call out for short stories on Facebook. And I, being the bad poet I was, said, I can write a short story. And I did. And they came back and was like, excuse me, and were like, being the poet I am. And they were like, we like the short story. Our publishers like the short story. Would you like a book deal with our publisher? And I, being the bad poet I was like, yeah, of course I would. And that's how we got the book that we are here talking about today.
So had you ever written a full-length book up until that point, or was it just poetry?
Just poetry.
Oh, wow.
Just poetry. About a dozen poems internationally published, just a few here and there around the world kind of thing. By choice, not, majoring in bad poetry, basically, in college.
Well, that's really cool because that's not the norm when it comes to people who are indie published or self-published. Usually they've been working on it or writing full stories for years before they ever get approached by an indie publisher. So that's incredible. I did not know that story. So thank you for sharing that. Yeah. And so now how has that evolved since then? You have some other works if you want to list those out. Tell us what's happened since then.
Well, I do have a couple things with, so actually, again, I'm going to try and keep these very long stories very short. So Fiction Vortex, actually about a year into the pandemic, was like, so we decide we don't want to do this anymore and close their doors. And myself, Douglas W. T. Smith, who you've had on the show, and a couple other authors who we were halfway or full ways through these contracted novels, freaked out.
Oh yeah. I bet your heart just dropped. Be like, what?
Yeah. Oh, no. You know, my fairy tale was over. J.M. Williams, he was the head of the Storyverse that we're all, he decided to take of Metal and Magic and make that into a new publishing group. And that's what we're working with now. So I have a couple things published through that group and then a couple other short stories. One is published through Dragon Soul Press, which is a historical fantasy. That is a, it's kind of, can I say my favorites? So much with Oh Mom, but it's a animal shifter, World War II, KGB agents set in Berlin during the Berlin blockade story.
Oh, wow.
So I did a lot of geeky research for that. Loved it. I have a fairy tale mythology story coming out soon. I have a top secret audiobook thing coming out with Oh Mom soon. Couple other fun projects coming out. So it's been kind of a rock rolling downhill process, I guess.
Yeah, kind of like ask questions as the issues arise and learn as you go.
Like, hey, here's the deep end. Push.
You know, that's so fun. And I think it's like that for anybody who starts writing, not necessarily in that order, but everyone has their own kind of like issues that come up or things that they have to learn on the fly. And I think that's one of the fun parts about being a writer in the indie and self-published world is that we get to learn a lot and we have our hands in so many different options.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's so much fun. But you actually kind of mentioned this next question a little bit, talking about the research. When I had originally sent you these questions to go over, it was, what's your favorite part about being an author? And you said characters and research. So elaborate a little bit on that.
So this is my geek flag flying very proudly, which I didn't realize that I had one. Well, okay, I definitely had a geek flag that I love to fly, but I didn't realize how proudly I love to fly this flag until I started doing the research for Scion. Things like, when does a dead body start to smell? And like, you know, like what sort of chemicals go into manure and are they explosive? And, you know, at what temperature do they explode? And do not go into my search history because
the FBI are like, who is this person? What are they doing in their free time?
Are they going to let me back into the country when I come visit my family? Because my search history is a little sus.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. Let's actually talk about that really quick. So I don't think we mentioned where you're actually located. So tell our listeners where you are, because obviously I'm here in the States.
Right. So the time difference thing. So I've actually been living in South Korea for the last decade. I left right after grad school for 1 year of teaching abroad. And I've not been back permanently since. Fell in love with the country, the culture, the people, just everything over here. It's with the pandemic, of course, it's been a little insane. And but the pandemic measures here are fantastic, you know. But
I'm sure you guys are doing better than we are when it comes to all of that. We won't get into politics too much, but yeah, that's so cool. Do you think you'll ever come back to the States permanently, or you think you're going to live over there for the rest of your life?
Maybe not in South Korea for the rest of my life, but after living in a country that has, you know, like social healthcare and, you know, like the idea of going to the doctor and paying so much money just to see a doctor and waiting for hours. Like here, you can walk into the doctor's office without an appointment, see the doctor within 10 minutes, pay like $10 to see him, get a prescription, go get it immediately, like another 10-minute wait, and pay another $10. And feel better within a couple hours. Like it's just, it's incomparable. Like I cannot imagine going back to basically waiting until I'm nearly dying to like take care of a cough in my chest or like until my arm is falling off to be like, is this okay? Can I live with this?
Yeah, like, exactly. There's so many people who just don't even go to the doctor because it's such an issue. Like, oh yeah, I have the flu, but you know, I'm going to suffer through it because I don't want to pay the doctor fees and everything.
There is still like an American part of my brain where like my friends are like, just go to the doctor. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm okay. I'm okay. And they're like, just go. And then I go and I'm like, oh yeah, this is easy.
It's like, so easy. Oh, I'm jealous. I'm so jealous.
Yeah.
I love that.
And I mean like traveling from here is so easy. Mm-hmm. And
exactly.
I can't do that in the States. I can't do what I do here and do that in the States, you know? Right. So like go see my family during that time or travel the world if that's what I want to do, or write a 400-page book.
Right? Exactly. You know? So speaking of, let's dive into the book. So tell us, what is Scion of the Oracle all about?
Okay, where's my flow chart? So Scion of the Oracle, it focuses on two main characters, which is Kip and Dolly. And the point of view kind of goes in between these two characters. Dolly is our young, rambunctious, go-getter, adventurous, wannabe adventurous, you know, 16-year-old firecracker. And Kip is our older, wiser, had his adventures, loves his book, wants to settle down and live his peaceful life, older gentleman of sorts, you know, kind of salt of the earth kind of guy. And they get mixed up in this, let's say, secret society of the city they live in, which at first Dolly thinks is great. Kip indulges her. And what they find is that parts of the history of their world has kind of been hidden from the modern culture. And it's been done on purpose by another secret society. So there's a couple of warring factions at work in this story. So there's a lot going on in the book. Oh, I'm trying not to give away these spoilers.
Right? It's so difficult.
They are joined on their adventure by a veteran named Aaron, a one-armed veteran named Aaron, who is extremely efficient, devastatingly attractive, and has some very, let's say, secrets. Some very
you don't know all of his story. Put it that way. Yes,
this is a great way to put this. And he joins them to help look for a character that's gone missing. All of this starts their adventure. As they go looking for this character, things are revealed that open up the history of this world and divulge the true nature of this world, which really brings forth, and here I'm just going to say, the magic of Soria. And that's the name of the world that they live in, is Soria. And that's also the name of the, I don't want to say the name of the world in all the books of the Storyverse, because that is the Storyverse that we work in. And I have with me J.M. Williams' book, Call of the Guardian. Now, this one was published by Fiction Vortex. And the reason I want to show you this one is because Call of the Guardian is technically the first book in the Storyverse, whereas Scion of the Oracle is going to be kind of the end of the Storyverse. So these two series are kind of going to be bookending the whole Storyverse, which is going to be thousands of years of history, which eventually this is going to be a massive, multi-author project, which we hope goes on for a very, very, very long time, long after me.
I think that's so incredible. And I think that's why it's kind of difficult to completely elaborate on Scion of the Oracle, because this is just one part of such a huge story.
Right.
Exactly.
And like, I can tell you what continues to happen with Scion, but what happens at the end of Scion of the Oracle is really only half of the complete story that I'll be telling, that really is only kind of bookending this massive universe of a story. This year, Douglas W.T. Smith will be releasing a novel called To Wield the Stars, which will be connecting with my story through, the stars. the star aspect of his has to do with something called star metal. It does connect with something in my book. I just want to say it all, but I don't want to say it all.
Right. I know. It's so difficult, because it's like, I want to let you guys in on all of the nitty gritty details, but at the same time, I want you to read all the books. So I'm not going to tell you anything.
I will tell you, there are assassins, there are witches, there's witchcraft, there's magic, there's, in my very unhumble opinion, some amazing, incredible characters that you kind of get a peek into these characters in this book. And then plug for my next book, you'll get to see them again in the next one. You know, like, there's kind of a little bit of everything. That sounds so cheesy.
But no, there is. It's all tied together. And that's one of the questions I had as soon as I finished reading was, okay, where does all this tie in? And then is there a second book? And I know that's what a lot of people ask you. So yeah. is there going to be a second full-length novel, or is it going to be a little bit different?
So there is going to be a second full-length novel. And like I said, a lot of the characters that we kind of get peeks of in Sign of the Oracle, they're going to get larger parts in the next book.
Ooh, like, exciting.
Yeah. So like in this book, and a lot of, this is one of the things that J.M. Williams is our kind of editor in chief at Of Metal and Magic. And this is one of the things that I kind of went back to him and was like, I really wish you would put book one on this, because a lot of the reviewers came back and were like, you dropped a lot of like story threads in this. And I want to be like, but I didn't. There are plans here that are, you know, because there's nowhere on here that says like book one of two, or like, even if you just put book one, because he came back and was like, but what if you want to write book three and book four? And I'm like, yes, but I think people need to know that these things were not dropped. Like these things are just kind of, they're being planted. Yes. To use the whole pun of the book, really, the flower pun of the book. They're being planted right now and they're gonna bloom later.
Right. Okay, it's all coming. It's all gonna be coming to an end. I love that. So we'll see. Yeah, I'm excited to see where these characters, but also some of the other characters kind of evolve. So when it comes to the characters, I mean, I have my favorites. And I think Dolly is one of my favorites because I love that she misunderstands what everybody's talking about all the time. She'd be like, you said this? No, that's not what we said. And I love that part of her character. I don't know why, but every time it was written that she misunderstood what they were saying, I just giggled. It was so great. So I think that's one of the reasons why I loved her character. But who is your favorite character out of Sign of the Oracle? I know it's a loaded question.
Yeah.
You can have a few.
Oh God, that's a really hard one. Like, I mean, of Kip and Dolly, Kip, definitely, like the older, the more like stable, the more like there's definitely something mysterious about Kip with the, he would do anything for Dolly kind of thing. Like there's some sort of redemption thing going on with him, right? Mm-hmm. Hadya, the chef, with the Yoons and the Dolly girl and the smoking and the copper colored, like Fu Manchu, be it like, you know, like that kind of character. Madame is actually one of my favorites. The way she talks with like answering her own questions, like that's, she's one of my favorites.
I liked her dialogue because you didn't need anybody else, because she was just rolling the conversation by herself.
She doesn't need anybody else. Like she literally,
she just needs the people around her to do what she's saying. And then she says,
we should all be so lucky someday.
Right. Yes. Like, she's my hopeful for the future of me. Yeah. That's who I want to be when I grow up.
Our own best friends.
Exactly. But there are so many characters. And I think that's one of the reasons why I read this book so quickly as well. I literally sat down and I think I read like 250 pages. I remember messaging you being like, I think I finished this book in like 1-2 days.
Yeah.
And it's big. It's like a 400 page book, but I was flying through it, because especially with the way that it's all laid out and the formatting of it, which we'll get to in just a second. But but I just wanted to say, like, with the characters themselves, they pulled the story along because there was new character after new character. And it was very interesting to see how the two main characters were pulled by the other characters to different types of adventures. So that was really fun. But another reason I read so quickly was because of the layout and the formatting. And so that was a question I had for you with this book. It's in 10 episodes, which each have like 6 to 10 chapters basically within them. So was this ever meant to be released as an episodic story, or was it always going to be in a book?
So this is actually the layout of the Of Metal and Magic publishing group corporation. I don't exactly know what we're going with anymore. but yeah, so I don't know if he's going to stick with this format, but right now, every Of Metal and Magic full length core novel. So we shorten it to OMOM.
Okay, you can say that.
Say OMOM or I'm going to start stuttering. Every OMOM core novel, the core novels are the ones that take place in our story versus Soria. They are laid out in episodes, which are meant to be episodic, which are meant to mirror TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Every novel has 10 episodes. Every episode is meant to be between 8 to 10 thousand words. Every episode is meant to begin with an epigraph. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm forgetting something. There's one more step. I can't think of it right now. Anyway, there's that very much that episodic
that structure
format to it. And Call of the Guardian is actually formatted that same way, where every episode has that, the Hercules format. You remember that old show, Hercules, mm-hmm. Xena Princess Warrior, where every episode has that problem that's got, I call it the Witcher format now.
Okay.
You know, where every episode has that problem that has to be solved, but eventually there's that over arc, that problem that's got to be solved over the whole season.
Okay.
So every episode has a little mini story, which has to be solved. And then you have that whole big problem over the entire season or through mm-hmm. the whole novel.
So in other words, he's making it so then it can easily be picked up and made into a TV show because all the work is done.
Right. Which was the tradition, which was traditionally, that's not, which was originally the Fiction Vortex format. Because I don't remember if they were going to do it for audiobooks or maybe web series was their original goal. But he decided just to carry that through.
Mm-hmm.
So that has been, this is actually something I sort of wanted to talk about too. As a new writer, that has been something that has been, I think, very helpful mm-hmm. and also very frustrating at the same time.
Right. I was actually going to mention that because if you have these episodes and you have this structure you're following, it's going to be easy to be like, okay, this is the format that you have to follow. But then at the same time, it's almost like, but I want to do this. It might be a little bit restricting in that way. But I think it would help a new author because it would be, it would give you the outline that you need to make sure that you're doing it right, basically.
Well, I think it was a little bit, I think as a new author, it was, I keep saying new author, but like I do have a background in writing
right.
and writing exercises just on a much shorter scale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like on a one page, one afternoon sort of scale.
Right.
Like this has definitely been an exercise in patience sort of thing. I think part of me really appreciated having that structure. And then the other part of me was like, so how do I get this in 8,000 words?
<You know>? Exactly.
But I do think that having to stretch that out made me stretch out my ideas and my creativity in ways that I wouldn't have otherwise. So I think even for new and experienced authors, like I think that for anybody at any level of creativity, at any level of being a writer, working in a storyverse and working with structures, having come from, I actually have a master's degree in writing. And I think that coming from that, I know exercises, you're like, No. But, like, I know how to write. Like, yeah, you do. But I think being able to sit down and do exercises at any level of writing is only beneficial mm-hmm. to yourself as an author. And whether you do it and then you later throw it away, it's still something that I think only helps you get better, mm-hmm. you know? And honestly, I call it SOTO because Sion of the Oracle gets kind of long after a while. Honestly, SOTO has gotten mixed reviews. Some people have really liked it. Some people have been like, not so good. Okay. That's okay. Because mm-hmm. I'm looking at it like, I'm going to get better. Right. Like,
exactly.
That's all right. Like, this may not be the best. I don't think it's as bad as you're saying, but you know, like, this is an exercise for me, and mm-hmm. and I'm going to take this experience and I'm going to take what people are saying and I'm going to take what I'm learning and I'm going to get better. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how people should look at things like this, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And it, well, I liked it. So who were those people to say that they didn't like it? Right. But no, everyone likes their own styles. And I feel like, especially when it comes to like epic fantasy series like this, because this is just part of, this is one part of a bigger story. Some people like to just have, there's a trilogy, right? But when it is expanded to this larger, it's a portion of a larger set. Some people kind of get nervous about that. They're like, oh, I don't know if I want to dedicate this much time to reading an entire series. Like, that's the only reason I haven't started reading a Game of Thrones, is because it's so big. And so
it is.
It can be intimidating for some readers sometimes, but I really enjoyed it. And I liked,
well, thank you so much.
Yeah. I'm excited to see where it goes next as well.
Well, and the complexity and the length. And I mean, and again, not having book one on this, a lot of people reading this thinking it's a standalone. And I right. think that does it a disservice, you know, mm-hmm. it's all a process, right?
Exactly. And yeah, we can only learn and get better with time. Like I'm probably going to like hate my first trilogy that I wrote. Eventually, you know, I'm going to be like, oh, I'm so much better now. 10 years down the road, I'd be like, yeah, that was crap.
You know,
but right now, I'm like, I love it.
You froze right when I was like, we can only hope.
I know. I was like, I think I know what she's going to say. And then it froze. Oh, too funny. I know my Wi-Fi. I'm just, oh, I'm so frustrated at it. That's happened a few times now. Anyway. Okay. So we kind of talked about some characters. We talked about the whole world. And that world building, I think, is something that is just incredible because it's over so many different authors. So how much input did you have on the actual world within SOTO? Did you have a say in it, or was it kind of given to you like an assignment kind of thing?
So this is actually kind of the fun thing, because I am kind of getting in on the front end of this. Like, so the world building in SOTO, like, the map in it is very basic right now, but the world is huge. So there is so much room for any author. This is a little plug. So any author that is like willing to come in and kind of like do a short story, write a little novella, maybe do one of the core novels, can basically name their own cities, name their own towns. We are still trying to name some of the core races. I've gotten to name two so far, and I've described a third that JM won't let me name because I've already named two.
That's so cool that it's such a collaboration process then. That's exciting, especially for other people coming in and being able to expand a world that's already been started.
Yeah. So if anybody's listening, watching, and would like to come name a race that I have created, I would really need that done before my book is finished next year, please.
I love it. That's so exciting. Oh, I'm excited to see where this all goes. And I love even having found out about Of Metal and Magic, because originally I was introduced to it by Douglas W.T. Smith. The Shadow of the Wicked is the first book that I read by him. And he was in episode 5. So that would have been back in September. He was featured here on Read It With Whiskey. And it was so great talking with him and being introduced to Of Metal of Magic. And then we got introduced to each other. So it's just really cool to see how it's even threading through Read It With Whiskey now. So let's see what other author from Of Metal and Magic we can get on the show.
All right. I'm going to send him back. Like, Doug, go back.
I love it.
We'll get as many as we can to build our world here with you. And then
we're just going to create a little Read It With Whiskey fan club for Of Metal and Magic. So we have talked a little bit about everything, and I wish we could go in more details about some of this stuff, but I think if we did, it would cause some spoilers. Let's talk a little bit. We talked a bit about some other projects that you're working on, but is there anything else that you're working on within like the next year that we might see come out?
Yeah, actually, I'm hoping... hoping there's always so much here, right? There's like a list. There's like a list of like 10, and then you have to choose like, okay, what can I get done in the next year? So I'm definitely going to get my proposal to JM for Scion 2, mm-hmm. not the title, but I'm going to get that to him before I leave next week for the States. But the historical fantasy that I mentioned, the Berlin KGB animal shifter, I'm hoping to do a series of 5 stories with the same main character over the course of World War II, like right before it starts to right after, during the Berlin blockade, maybe do about 5 stories and create a very short collection. And I'm really geeked. This is my geeked face. and try and get that published somewhere. Maybe go back to Dragon Soul Press and see if they'll do something with that. If not, maybe do it myself. Mm-hmm. And if that goes well, I might try and do... totally skipped over one of the main themes of this because I'm so excited. But I want to try and like theme it by season. So the first one is focused around Christmas. Mm-hmm. And so I want to do it around winter time. And then if that one has good feedback, I want to do like a spring, summer, and fall, mm-hmm. all with the same character, all based around World War II, around how basically she's taken as a young cub. And then grows up and how she's trained as a KGB agent, as a super secret spy, basically, missions she's sent on, a lover, you know, things like that. And then, so that's something that I really kind of want to get off the ground. Really would like to try and get a sci-fi written this year.
Oh yeah. that's my genre. My trilogy is sci-fi, dystopian. So, and it's funny because you're in fantasy, might be thinking about sci-fi, and I'm the opposite. I'm in sci-fi and I am percolating a fantasy idea that's been for a while now. And so I'm like, we're just going to like switch brains for a second. I'll take your fantasy brain.
Sit down with some whiskey and exchange some notes at some point.
I love it for sure. And speaking of whiskey, this is Read It With Whiskey, and it wouldn't be Read It With Whiskey without talking a little bit about whiskey. Let's see how many times we can say that word. But what is your favorite whiskey to drink?
So I'm actually a little bit more of a Scotch girl, which is still whiskey. But I didn't get into whiskey until I left the States, which is so weird. But I really didn't get into Scotch and whiskey until maybe a couple of years ago. I had planned a trip to go to Scotland by myself. I was walking around Glasgow. It was cold, a little wet, a little rainy in the middle of summer. I was so unprepared. I packed so poorly. I was cold. I was alone. I went into a little corner shop, picked up a little cheese sandwich, a little soup. And then I was like, I'm on vacation. a little whiskey. Yes, please. Thank you. Went back to my Airbnb, made everything hot, not the whiskey, but made everything hot, and sat in this little, like, little, what do you call them? The little windows.
Like a balcony?
The little windows with the little seats. Seat window.
Yeah. Why can't I think of the name of that either? It's just like a little pop-out window. This is funny. I can't think of what it's called. Window seat. Is that what it is? We'll just call it that.
It's a window seat. It's a window. I'm sure it's actually called a window seat.
It doesn't sound right, but we know what we're talking about.
Be brain good.
It's early for me. It's late for you. Our brains aren't working.
Let's blame it on that. So I'm sitting in the window seat and I've got my lunch. I've got my little jam of, I had grabbed a bottle of Glenmorangie, which I'd never had before, but, and had my lunch and a book. It was a terrible book. I don't even remember what it was, but I was trying to read it. And I was just watching the people in the city and it was perfect. It was just one of those moments where you were like, I am meant to be here right now. The whiskey might have had something to do with it, but I was meant to be there right then. And Glenmorangie is not like a fancy scotch, you know, it's like a very, it's a very reliable scotch. It's the very middle of the road. It's good. You know, it's fine. It's my favorite. Like it takes me right back to Glasgow. I love in that window seat. And
I love that. Like I have certain whiskeys too, where I'm like, this is where I was the last time I drank this, or whenever I drink it, I think about that experience. It's the same with like the olfactory memories where the scents and aroma remind you of childhood or something. So, right.
And it's nothing fancy and it's nothing like I drink my wine out of like pickle jars, you know, like, I am not a fancy kind of girl. Like don't swirl it around and stick it under my nose. Like I'm going to get a bouquet of, yes, this is red. Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I love it.
I can smell the alcohol from here. This will do. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. I'm ready. All right, EA, where can people find you and find your books and learn more about you?
Yes, I am not hard to find. I am on Instagram and Twitter at EA_Robbins1B. I will admit, you probably do not want to find me on Twitter. I follow five people. Five people follow me. I basically use it to write haikus after I drink whiskey.
So some of that bad poetry is coming back to us. Is that what I hear?
Oh yeah. If you love bad haikus, by all means, follow me on Twitter. I do have a website, earobbins.com. Again, 1B guys. I'm on Facebook, EA Robbins Writes. What else is there? Oh, and of course I'm on Amazon and Goodreads.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And then Of Metal and Magic. I bet they can go and search those websites and find you there too, because you're a big part of that.
Awesome. And actually, the Of Metal and Magic publishing Instagram, I do run that as well. So if you want to find me through that, you can as well. And I'm pretty good about responding on all of those lovely internet sites,
platforms,
locations.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, EA, this has been so much fun, despite the Wi-Fi issues we've been having over here in Indiana. I don't know what's going on with my house. It's been fun. So just thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, you too, Laura. Thank you so much for having me. It's been fun. It's been really fun. Thank you.
Again, I apologize for any of those audio issues that you may have experienced while you were listening to this episode. I tried to edit out as much of those issues as possible, but I still can't figure out what was going on or why all of these issues were happening. Hopefully, I have been able to figure it out since then, and all of the future episodes will be much more clean. let's keep our fingers crossed on that one. But anyway, me and EA had so much fun talking. I think I'm going to be an avid fan of hers moving forward and the entire Of Metal and Magic world in general. I mean, there's so many different books that are involved, as you heard in the interview. So I'll definitely have to bring on a few more people from that small publisher. And again, Read It With Whiskey focuses on indie and self-published authors, and Of Metal and Magic is a small indie press. So that's why it is included in this podcast. So if you are an author and you work with a small indie press, then you can definitely apply to be on the show. So don't miss out just because you're with an indie publisher. That means you are allowed. That does not mean that you're not allowed. All right, so next time on Read It With Whiskey, we are going to be talking with Seth Overton. Seth Overton is the author of The Mortal Gate. This is his first book that he is self-publishing, and it is game-lit. So in essence, people get pulled into a video game, and then a lot of really cool stuff happens. So you definitely want to tune in next time to talk with Seth Overton and I about The Mortal Gate. I'll talk to you then. You've been listening to an episode of Read It With Whiskey. I am your host, Laura Gentinen, and I just wanted to personally hop in and say thank you so much for listening. Your support of the podcast means so much to me, and I would really appreciate it if you could go onto your favorite podcast platform and rate and review the show. By rating the show, you're going to help more people find the podcast so then we can grow. Once you review the show, share it on your social media, share your favorite episode with your friends, and come back next time to hear more from self-published authors. I'll talk to you soon.